Welcome to the Combat Learning Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Peacock. Returning today is Jessen Icaziano, a black belt under Tony Pazinski. Today we're talking about multiple attackers and how to train for multiple attackers. We talk about training in BJJ, but also how to train the best way, which is really to include striking for the most part. So if that sounds interesting to you, hit the subscribe button on your podcatcher now.
So issues with multiple attackers. What's the big deal with multiple attackers?
The big deal that
most of our training is dangerous.
It's like uncharted territory for most martial arts schools where you're always taught to fight against one opponent, but never against two or three, and it's hardly ever sparred,
Right.
So it's a different kind of training.
So the things that make it so dangerous to martial artists in particular is it's basically uncharted territory. People don't spar multiple opponents. I would add that when they do, they're either doing a drill that is totally unrepresentative. In other words, like when I was in Kenpo, people took turns to attack you and it was all scripted, right? Or in Krav Maga, I've seen it's less scripted, but it's still like people don't attack you all at once. They don't attack you in sequence, or they do attack you in sequence rather. There's no honest response. So you throw a couple kicks and then the person just gives up and kind of backs up. And then the next person comes around and you kind of have a second to get your bearing. So in addition to it not being sparred, it's not being drilled properly at all. People are trying to address it.
Yeah. Having that liveness that you always speak about and teach about in this podcast is, not even like traditional martial arts places, spar, like just even spar like that regular with one opponent, two or three is
right.
Mainly unheard of in jiu-jitsu. You never have any, multiple opponent scenarios in the jiu-jitsu sparring. I wish we would have it, but it's most people just want to do the sport sparring. The sport sparring is more fun to do. You're not getting hit. I mean, you could grapple multiple opponents at once, but get real. There's always, if you're going to grapple on the floor, someone's going to try to stomp on your face or kick you in the face while you're trying to armbar one guy.
Yeah.
And the other guy's maybe holding your legs, holding your arms. It's like it's a lose-lose situation. But there are some things, some general things you can use in jiu-jitsu for, I guess, multiple attackers. They're principles that in jiu-jitsu and out of jiu-jitsu or just in grappling in general.
Right. There's weird things you can do. Like I've seen people, and this is not, this is not a go-to tactic, but if you get knocked down and you got a bunch of people trying to kick you, you can't just sit there in the fetal position forever. One of the things I saw was one of the guys got hold of one of the person's legs and kind of rolled up between his legs, almost like X-Guard. And, it doesn't totally protect you. It sounds kind of wonky, but when you think about it, that, depending on where you're facing, that person's probably going to try and kick you in your head. And most people are not soccer players, professional soccer players, not martial artists. So, if you time it right, you can get a hold of somebody's leg and roll up under him. It's better than just getting beat in fetal position. Like it can't get worse from there. So if you can get up under his leg, the other guys might hesitate to kick you. They might not. You never know. These things aren't guaranteed. But it's at least better than sitting in the fetal position.
And you could do, you know, quick tripod trips just to get the guy to fall down while he's falling down. You can, you know, butt scoot and face the other guy and maybe do some up kicks just to get some distance away so you can get up, because you don't really want to stay on your back. You'll probably be on your back for like maybe a second or two. That's the most you ever want to, because, you know, once they all gang up, it's going to be much difficult.
Right. Yeah. And the farther you let it get, before you take action, the harder it's going to be to get to exit. And you're really at their mercy in terms of riding the storm and surviving. So, yeah, I mean, if you think about it, it sounds wonky to get up underneath somebody, but it's something that's totally that you can do, right? It's not much more athletic than doing a technical stand-up. It's just a little bit of a roll, or might not even be a roll. You might just, grab them and kick your leg around depending the angle they're at.
You're under your opponent. When you're under your opponent, you're a little bit shielded.
Yeah.
Because you're kind of under it, but I know you're still vulnerable, but
yeah.
It takes away,
But there's a block, that now there's a mental block. It's like if you got a hold of him in safe clinch and got behind him, the guys that were trying to hit you might hesitate, right? Before they, they're going to have to readdress and try to run around, that kind of stuff. So
it sucks, but there's things you can do. Those things are just like sticky situations where there are principles, but everything is just different. Everything is, it's always a new scenario. So many factors, distance and if they're behind you, if you're on the ground, is there a wall behind you? Is there a curb you might accidentally trip on, or, tables, etc. But
definitely.
Yeah, but I guess as we go on to the show with this show, we can kind of filter out what are the best, principles we can.
Right, and that's a worst case scenario, but it's not uncommon to get overwhelmed by, especially if you're a grappler and your first inclination is not to strike. You might think you can be fast enough to deal with somebody before his buddies get a hold of you, and then next thing you know, you're being dragged onto the ground and beat up. So, that kind of stuff will come in handy. I think the Gracies kind of just throw up their hands on that stuff when it comes to. They kind of portray themselves as self-defense experts. They do put good stuff out there, but they kind of throw their hands up on that and say, well, nobody else is good at it either. But I don't agree with that. I think there are things you can do to mitigate the damage, and there are things you can do to improve your position little by little. They suck. They're not great. They're not like a cool, reversal sweep to get out of a bad position. But they are there. But, using that as a segue, I think that the Gracies have it wrong when they say that no martial art is good at it. Partially wrong. And no, it's not Krav Maga. It's not a reality-based self-defense system.
What about
it's not
Aikido?
Karate, not Kempo, it's not Aikido.
Oh, man. Come on, man. Get real.
It's boxing, right? And hear me out. I'm not talking about clinch. I'm not talking about complicated combinations. I'm not talking about the Philly shell system of defense and stuff like that. I'm talking about cutting angles, keeping people at a distance with jabs, so that you give yourself options. You can't get caught and you can exit, right? Because in a multiple attacker situation, mm-hmm. you're not going to be able to beat everybody. You're going to just have to get away. That's the best thing you can hope for. You win if you get away, not if you knock everybody out. Do you agree?
Of course. I mean, these days with all the writing that's going on, there's many case studies we can study against multiple attackers. And, it always comes down to awareness, situational awareness. Like most of the time in these riots or multiple attacker situations. The one guy is always getting sucker punched or getting a bat to their head or something, you know, or just something like getting kicked in the back. In those riots that we saw, where the guy gets sucker punched and he falls on his face to the ground, you know, it's
I think that was the million MAGA march or something like that.
Yeah. So
DC. Yeah. And what happened there was the fight seemed to have stopped, and he was kind of fielding multiple attackers, and when it looked like things had calmed down, he turns to walk away, which is a mistake. He should have at least ran, put his back to a wall so he could get his bearings. But I don't necessarily fault him for it. It's not like everyone's trained on this stuff. A dude came up and got him flush across the chin from behind. I mean, it was about as cowardly as a shot you could possibly think of, and it was about as effective as a shot as you could think of in terms of where it came from and the timing of it. And he just went down, and they were kicking him in the head. This is something you've got to think about now, especially if you, quote unquote, have the wrong political view. You could find yourself the victim of mob violence if you exercise your constitutional right to protest. I don't care. These Antifa people are violent, right? It's all over it's been on YouTube and on the news for 4 years now. Antifa has been violent since the beginning. They were involved with almost a gang war in California in 2016 between them and some neo-Nazi group, which of course we don't support these, neo-Nazis and all these people, but there's knives pulled on both sides. I mean, people have recently tried to say that Antifa is just an idea, but my issue is, why do they have a logo? Why are they all dressed the same? Why are they all up?
And the website that has their statement of beliefs, saying that they're Marxists and they demand, equality.
Yeah. So they have like a cohesive philosophy that they go by. They all believe roughly the same thing. They say the same things. They wear the same things. They keep showing up to the same types of events together. They have their tactics. They have their logo. They have various associated groups that go by different names, but they all kind of roughly consider themselves Antifa. The media likes to say there is no evidence that, and I'm going to say that there is no evidence that Antifa is just an idea. In fact, there's great evidence that they aren't. So if you are protesting for any reason and Antifa doesn't like it, it doesn't have to be a right-leaning thing. In fact, those types of people were protesting in Washington saying that they're going to go for the Democrats, that they were kind of roughly, I guess, kind of in league with. But honestly, Antifa is far left, and they don't like the Democrats. They don't like, I mean, sometimes they'll play lip service, but they don't like anyone, honestly. They're the type of people that if you don't believe what they believe exactly, if you're broadly left-leaning, they'll do violence against you. So nobody's safe from this. Because, if you're listening to this and saying, well, I'm a liberal or I'm a progressive, they're not going to hurt me. It's not true. If you show up for something, if you get fed up with an issue you consider liberal that Antifa doesn't like, you could be a victim of their violence too. I mean, that gets a little bit of a tangent, but right. And we see this right now. This is a big deal right now. They're threatening to come into the suburbs. If you live in the city, you already know this is dangerous. I had a situation working security over the summer where I got caught outside. There's tear gas. I had a mask, so I was inhaling tear gas through the mask, and then I had to wear the mask the rest of the night with the tear gas in it. And And there's all these kids are everywhere, and police marching with this huge like phalanx line down the street. And I didn't get in a fight, but you know, there's people coming from everywhere. And it could have been a situation like that, because some of the kids thought I was police at first. And then some of the other kids like, no, they're just security. And then they didn't do anything. But if I had gone to talk to them while they were trying to destroy something, because they were trying to destroy the building across the street, could have been a different story, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, this is something that everyone needs to consider. You can't just run away from this, especially in today's climate. So back to the boxing thing. Basic boxing, you don't need to go and become a Golden Gloves champion. You need to get good at moving the footwork in boxing, some of the best. You need to get good at cutting angles, and you need to get good at checking people with your lead hand on their way in before they can get to you, so that you don't get tied down. The key is not getting tied down. You do not want to tie up with anyone at any time. Now, striking is better when you can do it attached. When you can grapple with somebody and you can hit them. But this is an exceptional situation where if you tie yourself down, you are easy to grab and hit and pull down and stomp. So you want to be able to cut your angles, maintain your distance as much as possible, keep moving, keep them stacked. You want to make sure that you move in such a way that they have to kind of almost get in a line to get to you, so that you don't have to deal with them all from three different directions. And then you want to exit as soon as you can exit. You have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I just want you to kind of expand on that, lining them up. So you try to have them all in front of you in a straight line, not one where it's like, you know, a triangle, or you know, where you're the point, and there's you just want it in one line. Like right in front of you, right? You try to sidestep until they're all like behind each other as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that goes with the sidestepping movement, like you see in the cage. This has important ramifications for how you train and how you approach any pre-attack situation. And that is, do not let yourself get maneuvered to where there are people around you from multiple angles before the fight breaks out.
Yeah, it's almost...
Even if you're not sure that there's an impending fight, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's almost you have to start right before, you know, any kind of, you know, physical, you know, altercation can happen. It's like you're fighting before the fight, basically. You know, you're already scanning around, you're already kind of seeing who's behind me, who's in front of me, who I should take notice, you know, who's staring at me, who's giving me the, you know, those mad dog eyes. You know, keep in mind of, you know, everyone who's could potentially be someone that could, you know, inflict harm.
Yeah. So if you're walking in the middle of the street and you have somebody approaching you like snake eyes, you know, they're kind of one diagonal, like a V, like there's one person over here to your left and one person over here to the right, and they're closing in on you. Well, they're probably they can't occupy the same space at the same time. So they're not going to go shoulder to shoulder or line up and try to hit you straight from the front. One's going to veer off one way and one's going to veer off the other. Okay. So the best thing you can do, and honestly, you don't have eyes in the back of your head, so you don't know if somebody's sneaking up behind you too. So if you don't know, if there's not a fight going down, they're not close enough, you know, you don't have cause enough to start swinging. You know, one thing you can do is to walk towards a building, right? And maybe you're kind of limiting your exit strategy a little bit, but you can at least, you know, get your shoulder, your back against the wall, and kind of force them to approach you from a direction where you can see both of them. And if they want to try and attack you, they cannot get to you as easily as if you were just standing in the middle of the road with empty space around you. That's like a last-ditch situation. If you can turn down a road and walk away, or get into a car and drive off, or get a buddy or somebody, that's definitely preferable. You normally don't want to limit your exit your exit ability. The issue is you can run, they can run too. You know, and if there's three people, you have no idea how fast any of them run. Some of these people are on drugs. You never know. You know, crime and drugs mix really well. Well, they don't really mix well together, but they go well together. They're like very, very related, right? So you don't know what these people are on. You don't know how fast they are versus how fast you are. When you run away, awesome. If you escape, awesome. Awesome. If it worked, awesome. If you get caught, you get caught with your back turned, right? That's the issue with running away. And a lot of times with successful situations where people successfully survive multiple attackers, I mean, they were able to rock up some of the people well enough that they didn't give too big of a chase, right? I saw a video that was on the news a few years ago where there was a black guy that got attacked by some just random, I guess they're some racist hillbillies, and they just came out of a truck and there's like three or four of them and he kept on his feet, kept hitting him, made a couple mistakes, but you know who doesn't? But he kept moving, he kept on his feet, and he rocked them well enough. One of them went down, the other two kind of lost their fight, and he was able to run. He ran because they were dazed, right? And if you watch these riots and stuff that are more recent, and you see these guys that are fighting groups that are trying to gang up on them, because what they do is they try to get you separated from your group so that they can isolate you and beat you up. What you see with them is that once they hit these guys, there's quite a bit of latency between when they leave the fight and then when they reenter it. Some of them don't reenter, but when it's the ones that do come around and reenter, there's a latency period. So if you are practicing your boxing enough and you can get them pretty good with a stiff jab, maybe a cross, on a few of them, and the other are kind of hanging back, which you see a lot, that would be an excellent time for you to make an exit, right? Because they're kind of dazed and it's almost like a video game. It's not a video game, but it's like it's comedic the way it works.
Yeah, it's not like you want to, you know, go for the championship, the gold medal or championship, or it's not like Final Fight or Streets of Rage where you just have to deplete everyone's life bar down until it's, you know, to the red and you know, you move on to the next guy. It's totally defensive, totally evasive. You're not there to win, you know, win the match, but you're there to survive. Right?
Right, right. It's to survive, not to win. Which, you know, there's people on the other side of the political aisle that go down to these rallies and these riots and stuff, knowing they're going to get in a fight, and they might end up on YouTube with sound effects from like Super Mario or something, where they're owning these college kids with Antifa masks on that have never been in fights before, you know, and that's what they're down there for. But as martial artists, we don't do that kind of stuff. We don't support that kind of stuff. As funny as it might seem, we don't do wanton violence. We don't do violence that doesn't need to happen, and we don't go places looking for fights. But it does provide valuable case studies on the sort of social behavior of these attackers, which, by the way, you cannot count on in a mugging. The mugging is probably going to be different. These are people that want to get in and out fast.
Mm-hmm.
Those situations can go 0 to 60. Really, we know this. Really, they can get volatile really quick. Potentially way more violent, way more volatile, way more deadly than these sort of political run-ins we've been seeing over the last few years. And in those situations, it's even more important that you don't get tied down, don't let people surround you, and you exit as soon as you can.
Or get a gun.
Yeah. Yeah. So as far as the implications on how you train, you should set up scenarios where you allow freedom of the people. Craig Douglas does this wonderfully. You allow them to organize themselves and play the character and do what they're going to do instead of scripting it. But you start it from a position where you can actually honestly start to maneuver yourself before the fight happens instead of just starting it in the middle of the chaos. Because if you start it in the middle of the chaos, you're never going to learn the extremely valuable skill of maneuvering yourself. And there's no magic to it. You're probably going to end up on the ground most of the time, but during these drills. But you have to let people do what they're going to do and not script it and limit it too much, and only set enough rules that keeps it relatively safe. What were you going to say, Justin?
Yeah, there was a good drill I learned when I was teaching the kids, where one guy puts a flag or behind your back or tucked in your pants, like flag football or something.
Yeah,
Just put something behind and try to get the flag from behind the guy's back. Mm-hmm. So it forces the one who has the flag to consistently stay in front of your opponents. And, there's a lot of liveness there. There, of course, there is no striking, but it's a good beginning drill to not allow yourself to be surrounded by multiple opponents. So it's good. Try it out,
Yeah.
Then maybe, when you're competent enough, you could start adding some light striking.
Yeah, yeah.
Light boxing and...
Yeah. Yeah, then, you can do your progressions up to the full drill.
Even with grappling, start start with the clinch and see if you can escape from the clinch, a nice big push and... have that drill like in mind where with the flag in the back and just keep in front of you. Mm-hmm. If you have an open route anywhere, in the mat area, or even if you're doing it outside in the backyard or any public place, low key, then it's a good strategy.
Yeah. When you finally do work your way up to, I wouldn't spend too long on these progressions, because you can just, it's easy to tell yourself, well, we're just doing this. And then, it's 3 or 4 years before anyone even gets to do an honest multiple attacker drill. I've run a couple of these before, and your guys are going to lose, right?
Yeah.
You got to be comfortable letting them fail. You got to be comfortable knowing that your tactics that you teach them aren't going to work the first time they try it, the second, third, fourth, fifth time they try it. And it's important that you let them hit each other too, not just the grapples and all that, and not just touching and simulating. Because going back to the tactics we're talking about escaping, you can't knock everyone out. You can't submit everyone. The best you can do is keep them off, daze them a little bit, and exit. And when you're training, the most realistic thing you can do is have them wear their helmets and their gloves. And, you're not going to cut their faces. You're hopefully not going to get concussions. But when you hit a guy stiff in gloves and in a helmet, that's a real reaction, right? It's going to rock you. It'll give you a headache. It'll make you see white for a second. It could daze you. Self-defense training, you don't have to do this every night. You don't have to do it every week. You don't even have to do it every month, and you don't have to do it immediately, right? Because there's other skills that are potentially, more important to learn first, but this is something you do have to do semi-regularly, and you do have to do it close to the real thing, as representative to the real thing as you can. And we have equipment that can make it relatively safe. And if students don't want to do it, then they don't want to do it. But if you want to train it and you really want your students to be prepared, or you yourself want to be prepared, you have to run these drills. And you have to, You have to let things be as open-ended as you can make them be, and you have to let the reactions be as realistic as they're going to be, which means you let them hit each other and make hard contact in the midst of the drill.
Hey guys, real quick before the episode continues. If you're wondering how you can supercharge your training in a way that helps you actually perform better on the mat or in the ring, I've got the perfect thing for you. I've taken the scientific concept known as transfer of learning and distilled it down into a handful of dead simple, easy to understand rules you can use to supercharge your training today. And the best part is that it almost always makes training more fun, not less. Now you don't have to spend hours and hours of drilling just to fail when your practice gets tested in sparring or competition. Instead, you can take these simple rules and transform your drills and exercises into rapid skill-building machines. Your classmates and training partners won't believe your progress. And if you're an instructor, your students will get better faster than ever and have more fun while doing it. Go to combatlearning.com/transfer to sign up to our email list and grab your transfer cheat sheet now. Plus, you'll never miss an episode and get access to exclusive tips. And just to say thanks, I'll send you my Introduction to Motor Learning for Martial Arts PDF so you can get up to speed on the powerful concepts we're discussing on this podcast. So go to combatlearning.com/transfer now to get your cheat sheet and other goodies. That's combatlearning.com/transfer, TRANSFER.
Yeah, it's gonna be plenty awkward at first, but it's gonna be kind of chaotic. But in the streets, you know, anything goes, any situation, you just have to try to be mentally prepared for any kind of situation that can happen, and it all starts on the mats.
Right. Yeah, and with the anything goes in the street. I mean, if you're being mugged by some you know unscrupulous people, it's a quote unquote traditional mugging where you know it's not a politically involved thing, it's just a group of people that want to beat you up or take your things, man, you have more leeway with what you can do to survive, but if you find yourself in a political scuffle, the media will drag you through the mud, the police, depending on where you are, the police come get you. I mean, you could be legitimately defending yourself and still end up in jail in these political, you know, situations. So be mindful of the context you're going into. You know, on the one hand, the best self-defense is not being at the fight, right? So personally, I don't like crowds. While I support the right to protest, peaceful protest and all that. Actual peaceful protest. That's not my scene. Not saying I would never do it, but I'm not doing it right now. I haven't done it yet. You know, maybe don't be there, honestly.
Boogaloo.
Show your support another way. But, you know, if you go to one of these things, you got to be prepared. You know, you might get singled out on your way out. This is what happened to some of these people. They weren't necessarily contentious people. They weren't out there for fights. They were just trying to go home after the rally. And they got singled out and they got attacked, right? There's the guy with the red sweater with his crying girlfriend or wife or whoever it was. They're trying to peel her away from him. And he grabbed her back and she's falling apart and he's just trying to usher her away. And they're punching and kicking at him and screaming and yelling. They weren't trying to fight. They weren't trying. They were just trying to leave the rally. And they got caught. They got isolated by a gang of Antifa and whomever was associated with them, whoever it was, and were being terrorized and tortured and hit, had things thrown at them and water tossed on them, or trying to pull his girl away. You know, you got to be prepared for stuff like that to happen, even if you weren't trying to be oppositional. Even if you weren't trying to be oppositional, you could still get attacked by unscrupulous political actors if you're at a situation like this. Anything can happen.
So what do you think of what do you think of eye gouges? Like quick eye gouges, like a finger jab.
If you're going to rake somebody, I mean, I think a punch would be more impactful. like a punch to the face or the jaw would be a lot more impactful and less likely to miss. If you scraped a dude across the eyes, across the head, I mean, I don't think that's the worst thing you could do. I will say that groin strikes and kicks are literally the worst thing you can do.
And they'll get real mad.
Yeah, you will make them mad. At least with an eye gouge, not like an eye, like a rake, you might put them out for a minute or two. But with a groin strike, you're not going to take them down. You have to get too close. People don't think about this. If you're trying to strike somebody's groin from a distance, you have to kick. But if you kick, you are on one leg, stationary. With a punch, you can keep moving and whatever. With a kick, you cannot, right? I'm a Taekwondo specialist. You can kind of kick moving backwards on a technicality. Don't do it in a street fight. I know about being mobile while kicking in Taekwondo. And there's not a real way to do it that doesn't make you highly vulnerable, not just to the people around you, but to your own balance, especially when you're pulsing through with adrenaline and you're wearing shoes, which you're probably not used to training in, and you're on gravel or the street. It could have been raining. You don't know. You can't keep moving the same while kicking the same way that you can keep moving while punching. And if you want to not kick somebody's groin and strike them in the groin, then you have to be close enough to reach them with your arm. You can punch somebody in the face from farther away, but you have to get closer into range where you can be easily grabbed when you try to strike somebody's groin. So I don't think that works very well. These people come to these rallies on both sides with cups on anyways. It's a stupid strategy to try and take your time to get close enough to hit somebody in the groin or to put yourself on one leg for 3 or 4 seconds to try and kick them in the groin from a distance. Stick to punching them in the jaw or the face or whatever with your jab so you can stay moving at all times. Do not take any of those extra risks when you're dealing with multiple attackers.
No one, two?
Mostly one, maybe a two, you know, it just depends. Doesn't take long to throw a two. It's pretty quick, but
don't
be throwing 1, 2, 3, 4s and, you know, turning into Lil Mac from Super Nintendo.
How about them little greasy sidekicks?
Yeah, don't do that stuff. You got to keep moving. You got to keep moving. If somebody I've seen people try and like throw kicks and stuff in these fights. They get caught almost every time. You're not kicking people's knees in that easily. So don't even try. Keep moving. Keep them at bay. Get rid of all the hubris in your head and play it safe. Right. Yeah. Brush up on your boxing and. Learn to be light on your toes and cut angles while you're punching, while throwing stiff jabs. Not only will it help you one-on-one, it will help you one-on-many. It is an invaluable skill that anyone should have. And if you're a jiu-jitsu person and you're like, I don't really like to do sparring, at least learn some basic boxing, at least get good at cutting angles and throwing jabs on the move that are stiff enough to make somebody stop, right?
Yeah, if you enjoy jiu-jitsu, you should enjoy angles, not only on the ground but standing up. So it's your responsibility as not only a jiu-jitsu practitioner but a martial arts practitioner to learn at least some basic striking, because everyone strikes.
Absolutely, yeah. And there's and we see not just from MMA but even from all this footage we have now of real fights and stuff. Yeah, striking is not good enough by itself a lot of times, but neither is grappling. So if you're like a jiu-jitsu guy and you think it's just the bee's knees and you don't need to know anything else, there are so many situations, multiple attackers included, where striking is far and above, so much better of an option. Just basic striking, unattached, combat sports type of stuff, boxing, It's just so much a better option than trying to go the otherwise safer route in single combat of moving in, picking up the space, making it to where they can't really hurt you, and then hitting them or submitting them. You know, you got to have those, you need to have those options. Like, we're, you know, all of martial arts is all angles. You know, it doesn't matter whether you're doing striking or jiu-jitsu or grappling or whatever. You know, it's all angles, leverage, and distance management. You know, it's all martial arts, all beautiful to me anyways.
Yeah.
If you're a martial artist, if you love jiu-jitsu, get interested in striking a little bit. You don't have to do it all the time. Just do it enough that you get good at it, that you can actually move and not be slow and clunky.
Yeah, I mean, there are many YouTube videos you can watch. At least it's better than nothing. Or those Wave Masters or Heavy Bag or Shadow Box at least, and maybe some of your friends who know striking, you know, take a little video of and you know, let them critique how you do. Because years back then, we weren't thinking about this of, you know, these multiple attacker situations. Right now it's becoming more and more prevalent. So it's like, oh crap, you know, now we really have to start thinking about how, you know, as on our martial arts, how we're going to approach, you know, these situations.
Yep.
I feel like maybe the academy has to focus a little bit more on these multiple attacker scenarios, but mm-hmm. you know, at the same time, everything's locked down and closed up, so it's another topic. But
yeah, but when things do open, for sure. And or, you know, what you do in your private practice with friends and family, whatever. But I mean, yeah, those are great points. The academy, the school level, the gym needs to take more responsibility, even in combat sports schools. I think they still, just like, it's the same problem with combat sports schools as with Aikido dojos, right? Both of them, they're not necessarily like, they don't say, hey, we're all self-defense are a big thing, but they pay lip service to it, right? And while combat sports is far and above and nearly infinitely more useful out of the box without qualifications for self-defense than Aikido is, there are still some very notable exceptions to that rule that you have to actually, you have to mess with your training methodology a little bit sometimes in order to actually address those very real self-defense concerns. Multiple attackers is one of them. It's one of the obvious ones. Another one of the obvious ones is weapons. You toss those into the system, as it were, the ecosystem of sparring and combat sports training, and it changes the dynamic a lot. People move differently. And when they try certain sports strategies, they find themselves getting stabbed or shot, you know, depending on the different tools you train with to simulate. And if you haven't looked at stuff that immediate action combatives, shiv works, fit to fight, red beard combatives, I know some of these guys, I consider them friendly at least. I'm not close friends, but I know them and I like them a lot. I respect them a lot. And we're on good terms. These guys are doing excellent things for this type of training. It's as realistic as it can get. It is as, and more importantly, it's as honest as it can get. People say realism all the time. They toss around realistic. Reality-based self-defense guys, they love to say realistic, but to them, realistic has nothing to do with how you actually interact with the person, the dynamics of the drill. It has to do with what they believe is the 1-2 solution. Right? Maybe I'm not articulating myself that well. The Krav Maga guys, they think that there is a 1 or 2 solutions that's going to work every time. And so to them, to drill it is basically to be compliant and simulate it as contrived as they can. And, you know, you practice it, you don't really hit them, or they put a vest on and that's it. But that's not it. No matter how intense it feels to do something that's scripted or semi-scripted, that is not truly realistic. It has to be honest. And honesty is when the dynamics are more closer to sparring, and sparring is closer to fighting.
Yeah.
So you have to let them do what they're going to do. It has to be unscripted. It has to be as few rules as possible.
And if these crovers, you know, do actually spar with the moves they drill with, and if you can pull off there during the sparring, then, you know, then kudos to them. I mean,
yeah,
the 1-2 steps ain't going to work in itself.
It's
just something that needs to be with continuous, continuous resistance.
So, right.
I mean, it could work. You know, they could do a far wide hook, and I can, do a parry and do the judo throw. I mean, it can work. I mean, I'm just not going to stop there, you know. Maybe just for a technical drill, then, you know, when you do the sparring, then maybe you can do it, but most likely you're not, but mm-hmm. it could work.
Yeah. Methodologically speaking, at the end of the day, scripted and even semi-scripted drills don't prove anything. They don't help you. They don't prove anything about what you can or can't do. They're not a proving ground for what works and what doesn't work. They are, in terms of epistemology, philosophy, if you don't know that word, is basically in philosophy, that's basically the discipline of knowledge and knowing how you know. How can you be justified that you have actual true knowledge? And as an epistemological or epistemic machine, a scripted or semi-scripted drill tells you nothing. It's the same every time. It does not correspond in any shape, way, or form to what you're gonna find in the chaotic dynamic of a real fight, whether that be being ambushed by thugs or finding yourself in a political situation after a rally. The only way to know if something could transfer and you could actually have some confidence that it's not necessarily that it'll even work, because right, it's a really dicey situation, but that it could work, that it's plausible, is for you to do the work of suiting up and giving your students the freedom to act as they will in the situation with specific goals in mind. And everyone has to be able to fail the drill in order for it to be high fidelity, I guess you could say. So what I mean by that is you can't embed some sort of fail-safe or cue where the guy does a simulated groin strike, calls it out, and the dude just drops and he's out of the fight, right? Because that's not realistic. Groin, if you go look at people that have been hit in the groin, yeah, one or two of them will crumble. Most of them don't. Drugs, alcohol, mere adrenaline, a will to fight, an angle, slight missing, like you don't smash them just the right angle. It hurts. But adrenaline covers a lot of pain. Sometimes you don't even feel it. Drugs covers a lot of pain. Alcohol covers a lot of pain. Sometimes the pain is delayed. So you can't simulate a groin strike, have the people crumble, and then that's the drill. No, you have to let them keep going. Even if they're wearing a cup, it doesn't matter. You have to let them keep going. The most realistic thing, in my opinion, is to let them hit each other in the head a little bit, and let them react like they're going to react, and let them move around and have their pre-fight situation and that kind of stuff. So don't build in all those fail-safes. If the guy is starting to get beat up on the ground, then you're going to have to call the drill, obviously. You can't let him get truly and actually beat up, but let the guys do as they're going to do. Let them act with their agency, and that is going to be the most realistic, right? Give them their goal that they have to accomplish. Hey, you guys have to work together to get this guy to the ground. And the other guy is, you have to stay away from these dudes and not get caught and try to exit. You know what I mean? that's the drill. that's as close as the real thing as you can get. And then you have a few rules in there, rules of engagement in there to keep them from, being too dirty or crossing the line, or not that they would anyways, but just so they understand what the parameters are of the exercise. But you don't want to have so many rules. You don't want it to be scripted, semi-scripted, or have so many ridiculous rules that there's almost no value to it.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah. Any extra thoughts there? I think that's probably a good place to...
Oh, it's a little loud.
Oops.
If only we could get a martial arts school to open up.
Yeah, if only.
So, I mean, we're at a particular point where, you know, it's this is all nice ideas, but I guess the only way we can actually officially practice this is with, you know, with some friends, you know, who's not scared to go ahead and make physical contact with you. So, you know, that's the thing.
Yeah.
But it's at the same time, it's really important to know these techniques, this mindset and this foundation, because it's coming. It's certainly coming sooner than you think.
Yeah, you don't know, right? Something happens in your city, you're a business owner, this or that, or you live in the city and you just get caught in the middle of something. You have nothing to do with anything that's going on. You're not out there trying to defend your business. You're not out there trying to riot or hurt anybody or counter protest or anything. You could get caught in the middle of this and just not know, right? This happened in the Charlotte riots, not this summer, but a few years ago, when there was a detective shot another man and he died. There were people that did not realize that there was a protest scheduled that night, and they were walking around town and they were ambushed. This lady got knocked out on like this concrete stairway and fell down the stairs. This dude got chased into a garage, and they beat him down and literally stole his pants off his legs. And one dude ran off with his pants, and the other dude kicked him or whatever. There's video of it on the internet. And these are people that literally did not know, they did not realize, or they didn't think it was going to be an issue, and they just got caught in the middle of it. You just don't know when something like that will happen. You know, this happened to me. And I'm not, like I said before, that's not my scene. I don't go out into huge crowds like that. I know that violence can break up. I know I could be mistook for somebody. I know I could be ambushed. A shooting could break out. You just don't know. But, you know, I had to, you know, my superior gave me this order, you know, and all of a sudden I found myself in the middle of a bunch of rowdy kids screaming profanities. 10 feet or less from me, this kid lights a Roman candle and tosses it straight at police. I mean, what if he was right in front of me? What if a police officer shot a beanbag round at him and it hit me, right? And it caused like damage to me. And then I got attacked or something else happened and a police officer shot him with a real bullet. And I got hurt somehow, or I got mixed up in that. And the kids thought I was involved. You just don't know how you find yourself into these situations. I never in a million years thought I would find myself in the middle of a city after midnight, with a bunch of kids that were reportedly jumping security officers on their way out of work, being told by a security supervisor that I have to go outside. We're not hands-on. I don't have a weapon. I don't have any. I don't have OC spray. I don't have a baton. I'm not supposed to fight anybody. You can technically defend yourself, but they're telling me to go, quote unquote, make sure nobody's tearing anything up. So I'm supposed to go over there, put myself in danger, trying to talk to these kids and tell them not to do this. There's, you know, like I said, pepper spray all over the place coming down the street, stuck in my mask, and there's a phalanx of police walking down the street trying to push them to one part of the city. And then later that night, I'm at the other end of the site, and I'm by myself. There's nobody around, no backup, and I'm in this little guard shack. checking people in that try to come in to deliver stuff down and down to the building. And there's these people walking around, right? I walk by and this homeless dude starts cussing me up and down, like telling me how I, asking me how I can, you know, it, not even coherent. Like I think he thought I was police, right? He's like, how can you, how dare, you know, how can you live with yourself, whatever. And I'm literally just walking around this building. I can't arrest anybody. I don't have weapons. I've never, you know, said a crossword to any of these people around the site or inside or arrested anyone or done anything to hurt anyone. And this dude is getting himself worked up into a violent rant, you know, with violent, getting close, trying to get close to me with this aggressive body language over something that isn't even true. I'm just outside walking around trying to make sure that everything's okay and there's no damage or whatever, just being a presence, I guess. And this guy's working himself up to potentially do violence to me. You don't know. You don't know what you're going to find yourself. You know, you don't know where you're going to find yourself in life. You know, you could be coming out of a concert. You know, when concerts open up, you're coming out of a concert and you just step off the wrong alley and find yourself, you know, surrounded by four people. You just don't know. So yeah, you definitely got to be training the stuff, and you need to be training it not quote unquote realistically, but honestly.
Yeah. As best as you can.
Yeah, as best as you can.
Situational awareness can save your life even before throwing a punch, you know?
Right, right.
If you just know who's there and who's doing what. Mm-hmm. Who's looking? Yep. Who's staring at you? All of that stuff.
Yeah,
that comes first. The mindset comes first before the actual physical altercation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yep. That's the number one skill to cultivate. Which is, there's not really drills for that. That's kind of something you have to practice in your daily life and be intentional about. But you know, the mind is weird. The brain is weird. You're having a good night. You're doing whatever. You think you're being situationally aware. You take a few things for granted, and all of a sudden, you know, an alleyway that didn't have anyone in it, the when you walk down it on the way there, oh, you know, now there's four people there waiting for you, and you didn't realize it. You thought it was safe, and you didn't see them. You know, maybe you didn't see them when you walked into the alley. You know, they just kind of appeared from behind somewhere. However, these things happen, right? Cloak and dagger, you know. Doesn't sound that plausible. It could be plausible. Some alleys have these dumpsters in it, depending on where you live. There's places where you can hide. There's places I patrolled down to, you know, uptown Charlotte, where there's plenty of places where people could hide and you wouldn't see them, you know, before you walk down the alleyway. So you know, sometimes your situation awareness is your first line of defense, but the mind is weird, and sometimes you make mistakes. Sometimes you take things for granted. Sometimes you get forced away. And what's your plan B? What's your plan C? How are you going to survive?
Gun and gun.
Yeah. Can't always have your gun either. It's a good one to have, but it's can't always have it. But yeah. All right, man. I think that's a good place to end the episode. I think we covered that in depth.
Yeah, I wish we can do these podcasts with video and just like physically demonstrate them.
Yeah, one day we'll be able to do it. One day we'll create a companion video for this episode.
Yeah,
and we'll actually run. We'll get some real students and actually run an example of the drill, so you can see it happening. It won't be pretty, guys. Just because people aren't kicking ass and waxing stylistic and finessing guys, you know, like
ain't
in
no
the movies, doesn't
ain't no
mean
Jackie
it doesn't work.
Chan movie.
Right, right. For yeah. Sure. All right.
So good. Well, all right.
See you next time.
See you later.
Thanks so much for listening to the Combat Learning Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, remember to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or your podcatcher of choice. It really helps us out. Finally, this episode, including the intro music, is produced by Micah Peacock. Thanks in advance, and I'll see you on the next episode.